Game on.
Game on.
2FM.
And you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight. Friday night means Ian Abrahams on football, Liam Nash on racing. We're going to preview the women's football final with Sharon Courtney, rugby with Joe Schmidt, and Gary Murphy is with me in studio. You're very welcome, Gary.
Thanks, Hugh.
Rory McIlroy just teed off at the second round of the Tour Championships and a 4 under par 66 yesterday. Not bad.
Yeah, big start. I'm all over him for the weekend. I think he'll win.
So do I.
Great news today in Europe with Paul Dunne and Jack Hume getting through in the first stage of the European Tour qualifying school.
Yeah, so two more to go.
Second stage, four rounds, top 20, kind of 22 or something, and ties get through. And then if they get through that, final stage, six rounds, top 25 get through and ties out of about 196 lads.
Wow. That's why it's just such...
Well, so far so good, because Gary Hurley got through last week of the, you know, our Walker Cup superstars, and Gavin Moynihan's added next week in Portugal.
Okay. Hopefully and hopefully he plays better than he did
Irish guys
at the Italian.
Got through as well.
Sorry, hopefully Gavin plays better than he did at the Italian last week. Yeah, maybe that was just after the Walker Cup.
Yeah, it's a tough one, really. I think that's why Gary Hurley was impressive. He started on the Tuesday morning after the Walker Cup. So that was an impressive performance for him to get through, and Colin Campbell got through, Jonathan Caldwell, and a few others. So there's, you know, we've a bit of hope for some new faces on tour next year.
McIlroy has just parred the first, and he is 4 under par. Henrik Stenson leading the way on 7 under. Very impressive yesterday with a 63. But let's see what McIlroy can manage today. I mean, it's funny, you know, we were sitting here last night about the brilliant story of Peter Lawrie going over to Germany in the Porsche European Open, not even having his gloves, getting in as 8th reserve, which he was at one stage. Shot 2 under yesterday, and today he just missed the cut. I mean, it's just, that's the game.
Yeah, he missed it by a shot. He had a bit of a car crash in the front nine, and excusing the pun, at the Porsche European Open, but and came back great with 4 birdies, and it's the last hole is probably by far the toughest hole in the course, and he needed a birdie. And it's funny, like, he needed it, didn't get it. Peter Hansen was on the bubble, missed the green left, and needed kind of to get up and down to definitely make the cut, but probably get in by one, and he chips in.
Yeah,
you know, so it's funny, and it's a brutal sport. But Peter's in next week at Dunhill, which is a huge event.
Okay,
and he needs to make the cut there, and he's in the following week too at Portuguese Masters. So he still has 2 more chances. But
is Paul Dunne? Paul Dunne is playing in both of those.
Paul Dunne is playing, and Gary Hurley, I see, is playing as well. So Hambrick Sports, his new agents, have done a good job for him. Well,
excellent.
Done to Rory Flanagan, who's a fantastic guy. He works for Hambrick, an Irish fella. And Paul is up there next week too, so it'll be, you know, back to the scene of the crime as such for Paul Dunne, and very exciting for Gary Hurley, his first proper start as a pro.
It might be worth a few quid, Paul.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? Look what happened to
he's
Shane.
He's got a better chance of winning than you or I, Hugh.
That is correct.
He's playing.
Yeah. 51552 for your text, by the way, at Game On 2FM. If you've anything to say between now and the end of the show, big weekend in sport. We've got obviously Ireland against Romania to come. Michael Corcoran spoke to Joe Schmidt after he named his team. 12 changes, the oldest team to ever line out at a Rugby World Cup match, the Ireland starting 15 that will take to the pitch on Sunday against Romania.
Which probably emphasises the fact of how important it is for us to do well in this.
Yeah.
I think, you know, because there's going to be a transition period afterwards, you'd have to imagine.
Absolutely. And, you know, yeah, I mean, Romania, they gave France a tough time for about 65 minutes, and the scoreline flattered the French somewhat, you'd have to say. A couple of late tries for them to secure the bonus point, but 4-day turnaround for the Romanians. I know this has been obviously a stick that we've been beating repeatedly about the World Cup, but it's going to be tough for Romania.
I think that if you... No, I wouldn't... If you look at the Welsh guys, you know, the fact that there's only... You know, the turnaround is so quick and there's only 31 guys in the squad. Why not make it 35 or 6? You know, because you do have to swap it around. You can't keep playing the same guys. They should
sure.
have, if the turnaround being that short, they should have allowed more guys in the squad, I think.
Yeah, interesting point. Plenty to come, as I said, at Game On 2FM and 51552. But we're talking football first, because the Swiss Attorney General has opened criminal proceedings even, against the FIFA president, Sepp Blatter. Tony O'Donoghue is on the line from Cork ahead of tonight's Electricity League clash between Cork and Derry City at Turner's Cross. Before we get to that, Tony, I have to ask your reaction about Sepp Blatter and what's happened. I take it you're not too surprised.
To be honest, Hugh, I'm surprised at the timing, because today's FIFA executive committee meeting was simply preparation for various FIFA competitions. This was the agenda. A task force on women's football was to be discussed. The reform process, whatever that's supposed to mean, and the agenda for the extraordinary Congress next February. Now, February is when Sepp Blatter was due to finally step down. You'll recall he was re-elected for a fifth consecutive term last May, and a couple of days later he just turned around and gave notice of his intention to quit. But you know, this whole FIFA scandal is extraordinary. Back in May, you'll remember the seven FIFA officials who were arrested in Zurich ahead of the last presidential election. Since then, and these allegations that have come out against Jerome Valka, first of all, the General Secretary, and he was suspended regarding allegations of corruption in ticket sales. So that left Blatter, who to me always seemed like he had a fairly clean snout, in the sense that he got perhaps other people to do the work for him, and there hadn't been a trail to him. But now the Swiss Office of the Attorney General have initiated proceedings on suspicion of criminal mismanagement as well as suspicion of misappropriation. So right to the very top of FIFA, the scandal continues, if you like. And you'd have to wonder now where their reform process is going to go, because who's at the head of FIFA at the moment? Blatter being investigated, Valka suspended. No one's in charge. It's crazy.
Yeah, and Michel Platini has been linked as well. I mean, suspected of a disloyal payment, 2 million Swiss francs to UEFA for President Michel Platini in 2011. The man who has been, you know, many people's favourite to succeed Blatter when the election does come, has now been linked to Blatter, who's under investigation. So it's a mess at the moment.
I think that is actually a far more significant aspect to what's emerged today, because Platini was the front runner to replace Blatter. He talked about reforming, cleaning up FIFA. But if he's part of the dirt, well, then he shouldn't be the man to clean it up, you would suspect. I mean, it's very serious. It was work that he did between January 1999 and 2002, but the payment, this disloyal payment of 2 million Swiss francs, wasn't executed until 2011. So he had to wait around 9 years for his money, for whatever he did for FIFA in that time period. It does seem very suspicious indeed, although, as you can imagine, Blatter's lawyer is saying that he denies any wrongdoing, of course. But this looks absolutely terrible for Michel Platini and all his supporters, among them the FAI, of course, who were always strong supporters, very closely linked with Michel Platini. So you'll have to wonder how he's going to react to this. But it really means that FIFA, from top to bottom now, looks very, very dodgy indeed.
Okay. Listen, obviously, we'll talk to you maybe next week as we get more details on that. I want to talk to you about Cork City and Derry tonight. You're at Turner's Cross for that game. Fair to say these two teams have different agendas, Tony. I mean, how do you see it setting up?
Well, interesting from both teams in terms of team news. For Cork City, Mark Sullivan unavailable through injury, so John O'Flynn starts for them. For Derry, no Patrick McElhenney, and that's a big loss for them, because they were hoping to get him involved tonight. They were hoping to have him involved in the next number of games, crucial for Derry's survival, you'd have to say. Caretaker manager Paul Hegarty came in after Peter Hutton. McElhenney, probably the most influential Derry player, and unavailable tonight, so that's a big deal. These two teams know each other so well. They've played each other in the league and in the cup. The first cup game went to a replay. Won down here in Turner's Cross by Cork City, but even though they won the game 3-0, they were certainly not that much better than Derry, as the scoreboard might suggest. So you'd have to think that Derry need the points more. Cork have more or less given up the chase for first place and consider. I spoke to John Caulfield a short time ago. He just wants to ensure that they have European competition again. Shamrock Rovers trying to get second place, yet Cork City trying to hold on to that at the very least to ensure European competition next year. So I'd imagine Derry have more to play for, but I imagine also that the loss of McElhenney will be more keenly felt by them than the loss of Marky Sullivan for Cork.
And they do have a new manager for the time being, Paul Hegarty. They got that win against Shamrock Rovers, so the little bounce back, if you like, when a new manager comes in. I mean, John Caulfield obviously not going to take this one lightly, without using too many clichés there.
Yeah, but you know, Paul Hegarty has been around the Derry scene for such a long time. He's been in this role before. I'm not sure if he even wants it full time, but yeah, the bounce they got against Shamrock Rovers, that was huge for confidence and for morale from a team that just hasn't been firing recently. So, you know, if he can take any points away from Turner's Cross tonight, he said it's a long journey, but they want to go home happy.
Okay, listen, Tony, we'll let you go on. I know you're very busy there. Thanks so much for making the time to talk to us.
Cheers, you.
Tony O'Donoghue there. Let's stay with the Airtricity League Premier Division, because John Kenny's on the line at Tallaght Stadium. Hey, John.
I got to take up residence here. This is my third game in 5 days.
Yeah,
here.
You must like it there. Galway United tonight.
Indeed. Big game for both sides. Mm. Vastly different reasons, of course. Rovers looking to cement a place in Europe. Galway looking to avoid the drop. Third meeting in the league this season. The Hoops have won 2 today. 3-0 victory in Tala here. And a 2-1 win in Aim at DC Park. But both sides won their last league games. Prior to that, though, they haven't been in great form. Rovers hadn't won in 4 before Brandon Mile's free kick. 2 minutes from time on Tuesday here against Bray put them 5 ahead of St. Pat's in the race for third place. Rovers this week extended Mile's contract, signing the 21-year-old to another year. With just 3 points separating the bottom 4 on the table, Galway will be desperate to get anything from this game. They hadn't won in 6 before a 4-2 win against Longford. The rest of that losing run. But the odds are against them. United have visited Tala 7 times in the Premier and that 1-6. They only scored once here as well, and that was 6 years ago in a 1-1 draw. I think they'll be happy enough if they get out of here tonight with a draw. Can't see really being any changes in the Rovers line. Don't have it yet. The question is, will Fenlon go with Damien Duff, who was rather ineffective against Bray on Tuesday? Galway have injury concerns surrounding Ryan Connolly, Jason Molloy and Alex Burness. As I said, I haven't got the teams quite yet. We are kicking off a little later than they are down in Cork at 8 o'clock here in Tala.
Yeah, and of course this one isn't on television, John, so maybe the Rovers faithful will turn out and not stay indoors.
Yeah, hopefully. It was a very poor crowd here on Tuesday, and there's a lot of disgruntlement with Rovers because Fenlon here's been here for a couple of seasons now and they have finished third in the league for the last couple of seasons, and third and fourth is not what they're looking for. It's a very strong squad. They should be really challenging for the league honours and be a lot closer to Dundalk, who they actually have to play a little bit later on in the campaign with 6 games to go. But and Damien Duff is obviously the quandary as well. Is he fitting into Pat Fenlon's setup here? Did Fenlon really want Duff to be signed? He wasn't great on Tuesday when I saw him here, but interesting to see if he starts tonight.
Yeah, okay, brilliant stuff. Well, your third time in a week, as you say, don't be hanging around those changing rooms too much. They'll really get freaked out.
Who's your man? That was Kenny again, yeah?
Super stuff, JK. Thanks, man. Enjoy it.
I will.
Cheers. John Kenny there at Tala Stadium. Good stuff. Right, we'll move on to rugby. And as I mentioned, Joe Schmidt has named an Ireland 15 to play Romania. Their second game in the pool after a comfortable win against Canada. 12 changes, so this means that everybody's going to see game time after 2 games, which is what you want in a squad, and I suppose the exact opposite of 2007 when Eddie O'Sullivan was in charge. It just encourages competition for places and gives the guys, you know, the message that, you know what, if you do play well, I'm watching you and I'm keeping an eye on things.
Yeah, I remember Alan Quinlan actually said to me how devastated he was because he was down there, you know, holding the bags and knew that that's all he was going to do. So yeah, you have to, you know, especially with the short turnaround of games as well, you got to include guys. And you know, if you're trusting, because sometimes it's not the superstars that actually come through and do it for you. So in New Zealand one 4 years ago, I mean, it was just,
you know, they're fourth choice fly half.
If you have arms and legs, run out there and go. And that's you know, so you have to give the guys in these kind of games an opportunity to shine.
Yeah, well, let's get the thoughts of the Ireland coach, Joe Schmidt. He was speaking to Michael Corcoran a little bit earlier on his team.
Yeah, winning a game, getting game time for players and freshening other players up. So it's, you know, it's threefold, I guess, in what we're trying to do. But the priority of all those three is definitely winning the game. And I think the players that do have the opportunity to play, they're going to have to go out there and put their best foot forward, really.
In terms of those who are not there, if I can just cover off that housekeeping initially, you know, Rory Henshaw isn't there, Ian Henderson, Johnny Sexton, Peter Romani. Given the fact that they didn't train earlier this week, did that sort of rule them slightly, kind of out of contention when it came to your thinking?
Nah, not really. Johnny, we've got 3 10s in the squad, so you know, we were probably going to factor him out of one of the 4 games in the pool to freshen him, so this seemed the obvious opportunity. Peter Romani was fine, he trained fully today, and so he was available to be selected. We just kind of felt that Sean O'Brien, the good thing with Sean is that he probably more so than Pete covers all 3 positions in the back row, so he's a one-shot replacement. And retaining Jamie was relatively easy to do once we decided not to select Paul O'Connell, because it gave us the obvious guy to lead the team. So from that perspective, that was easy enough. Again, with Ian Henderson, you know, I had Paul tap me on the shoulder saying he was very, very keen to be involved this week. Ian, that was a pretty big workload that he had in the Millennium Stadium. So, you know, leaving him out this week and at the same time being able to get a bit of work into him. He trained fully today as well, Ian. So, you know, there's no injury concerns with those guys. But if we were going to have one chance in this 4-week block to freshen anybody. It was going to be during this week because we had an extra day, and you know, and it's early days, so to be able to get some guys the game time and to get some guys out of the game, it just made sense for us.
We both know how competitive Paul O'Connell is and how he wants to play every minute of every game. What sort of a conversation did you have with him to say, listen, I'm thinking of not starting you this week?
Look, I don't know if you've seen those photos from the roller coaster, but I just said I'll put you back on that roller coaster if you don't take this in the right heart. You know, I've never seen that man terrified.
I haven't done it.
But that photo certainly revealed another side to him. I think with Paul, he's conscious of the squad and the need of the squad to be involved, and he also understands the quality of Dev and Donica, and that, you know, we don't believe we lose a massive amount by giving those two guys their opportunity. I think for Dev to be able to call the line out and hopefully get some success there, because one of the things that happened with Canada is that they didn't really go after our line out at all. They stayed on the ground a lot and stacked up ready, packed up ready to stop the drive. So I think what we saw with the Romanians is they really went after the French line out, and it disrupted a lot of the French ball from their set piece, because they also went after their scrum, and there's a couple of areas of real challenge for us. And so to put Dev and Donica into that situation is going to be a challenge for them, and allows us to kind of make some judgments for further on. But at the same time, it demonstrates to them that we trust they have the capability to deliver for us in this match.
When you look at the starting team, you know, 12 changes, just 3 or 10 from last week. Are there areas of last week? I know it's a different set of players essentially, but are there areas last week that you felt that need to be improved on as a kind of an overall team, if you understand what I mean?
Not really specific areas. I think there were specific moments in the game where there were a couple of passes that went awry, but at the same time, the quality of the passing was really good. There's a couple of breakdowns we didn't quite deliver on, but most of the time the breakdown was well looked after. We had good success at scrum and line-out, but I think the one thing I would say is that with the scrum and line-out and with the breakdown, we're up against a totally different beast this week, and therefore, you know, that they have been areas of focus for us, because we just saw how well Romania went after those areas in the French game.
Just a final word, we've had a chance to look at the Romanian team, your impressions of it and the challenge that they'll pose this coming weekend.
Yeah, I think it remains a really balanced team. I think they've retained half and rested half of what was there last time. I think a guy like Botezatu coming in for Lemnaru, I don't think there's a massive amount of difference between those two players. Botezatu has the same strength in the air. He's also a very physical winger and is strong down the left touch. They've retained the other winger and they've retained Fuku, who was really impressive last week. Sabo Gale, he came off the bench anyway, and you know, his physical contribution will be telling, I've no doubt at all. Kenny Kiniliau, they've retained from last week, and again, I think his footwork, his ability to put the ball behind, his ability to defend and shift quickly is very effective for them. You know, they've changed the halfbacks with Waringi coming in and Kalafatanu. At the same time, they've kept some continuity in their back row. Kapo comes in, but he's had 51 caps. It's not like he's some raw kid coming in. They've named their most experienced ever starting 15 for a test match. So for us, with Marco Vea being retained at 7 as captain, and so he'll shift across there. He's a big, strong man, so it gives them some real power in their carry with Kapo and Marco Vea and then Usach, who was probably the standout for them, Valentin Usach last week. And he's joined by his brother Andre in the front row, and those two tend to play well together. They play in the same club or have done in the past. They've retained one of their second rows and brought in a fresh one. They've left out Van Heden and brought in Tanita, who's probably a little bit more solid in the ball carry. Van Heden's more the aerial player, and then they've retained Ion at tight head, and Radui has come in at hooker. Again, he's a bundle of energy, and you know, compared to what they had on Wednesday night, I do think that they've got a really good balance. I think Lynn Howells has certainly been around long enough to have that experience of balancing a side and retaining enough for continuity and adding enough for freshness and change up. So I think you know, it's going to be tough.
Interesting stuff as always from the Ireland head coach Joe Schmidt there ahead of the Sunday match against Romania. A couple of texts in. Namibia were the bet of the World Cup, plus 75 evens against the All Blacks. Unreal, from an anonymous texter. Completely agree with you. I mean, New Zealand had to score a point a minute just to cover that spread. I mean, that's madness. A point a minute in the World Cup. I know, look, Namibia, obviously, a lot of part-time players, but you're just putting so much reliance on fortune there.
Well, there is. I think if it was a World Cup final, it'd probably be something you might look at. But there's no way that the All Blacks are going to have their foot in the pedal for 80 minutes against Namibia. It's just, it doesn't happen, because they know they're going to have to conserve elsewhere.
Argentina minus 20 against Georgia today was my little one.
Yeah, but there's no point telling me that with 10 minutes to go. You know, it's kind of 2 o'clock this afternoon, less than the bet of the century.
All right, well, this one at the weekend, Wales plus 9 and Samoa plus 20 against South Africa. Little double there. Works out, I think, about 3.5 to 1. What does Gary think? Does Gary think it's worth playing Lynx courses during the off-season between November and March, especially when prices are half what they would be during peak times, his own?
Undoubtedly, yeah. The only thing is, you're not going to get, you know, the true Lynx golf, because it's not going to be hard and fast, but it's going to be hard and fast relative to playing Parkland golf. And as he says, I mean, there is some great value out there. Like up beside me, you know, Baltre is still brilliant value in the winter time. Sea Point, I think they're giving Sea Point away. It's only about €30 to play there in the winter time. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a fabulous track.
Down near me as well, the European Club, you can enter a competition in October for €50, and it's a match play, and I think there's at least 8 or 9 rounds. Cool. So if you're any good and you fancy, I mean, if you played it once, you get your money's worth, and anything after that's a bonus then.
Yeah, it's the same. Portmarnock links to Winter Alliance on a Tuesday, and it's, you know, I played there the other day, and it's always in fabulous nick. So definitely, and it gives you a good variety playing links golf as well. You know, it's just a different thing to playing Parkland, and you won't have any mud in your shoes when you come into.
That's true. Rory has just bogeyed the third hole, so he's gone back to -3. Listen, we're going to take a quick break and we're back after these.
When the going gets tough, the tough get going, and that's true here at Hell and Back.
First up, Ruth McDonough. It's her first Hell and Back, but she's no stranger to hell. She once sat through a 523-slide PowerPoint presentation without a toilet break.
And what about Aidan Walsh? He gets public transport to work at rush hour every morning.
Can you make it through Hell and Back? Sign up for Ireland's toughest mental and physical endurance challenge, taking place throughout Ireland in 2016 at hellandback.ie. 2FM, bringing you to hell and back.
It's the final weekend of the Harvey Norman Love Your Home Sale, and we're offering free delivery on sofas, dining furniture, beds and mattresses. Choose from a huge range of leather and fabric sofas, all with a free 10-year structural guarantee. Save on luxurious beds and Irish-made mattresses for all the family. Plus, get free local delivery on sofas, dining, beds and mattresses. But hurry, the Harvey Norman Love Your Home Sale must end Sunday. Don't miss out. Terms and conditions apply. Minimum purchase required. See in store or online for details.
It's kicked off, and we're all over it.
Try number 3. Would you believe it?
MasterCard is turning the world oval for Rugby World Cup 2015, and we want you to be there. We've got flights, transfers, and those all-important match tickets for Ireland's crunch match against France. Have you got what it takes to be part of our MasterCard squad? We'll find out when you answer Ireland's MasterCard call. C2FM.ie for more.
Now, you're very welcome back. 51552 is our text number. On Sunday afternoon, Dublin and Cork lock horns in the women's football final at Croke Park. Sian Courtney, Monaghan captain this season and All-Star, of course, is All-Star even. Jeez, trying to get that one. It's on the line. Hiya, Sharon, how are you?
How are you? How's things?
Not too bad, thanks. Look, it's a repeat of last year's final, and no one needs to remind Dublin about what happened in the last 15 minutes of that final. A 10-point lead gone. So you'd imagine they'll have that somewhere in the back of their heads.
Absolutely, and there's been a lot of talk about it, and I suppose the big comeback that Cork had last year got a bit of media attention, and now in the last couple of weeks when the match-up again, Cork and Dublin, there has been a lot of talk about it, and just looking at Dublin's a couple of media things during the week and little clips and videos, and it has come up so much, and you even hear the Dublin players talking about it. So I do think it is going to be a factor again, and it probably is playing on their mind. I'd say it'd be hard to not have it playing on their mind, the fact that it was a 10-point lead that they let slip. So it could come back to haunt them again maybe this weekend.
Yeah, I suppose it can go two ways. You either use that as motivation and say, you know, look, that was last year, we're not going to let it happen again, or it does play in the back of their mind. And I'd be very interested to see if Dublin do creep ahead, particularly in the second half, how they manage to deal with that.
Yeah, look, as I said, it's been talked about and it has to be playing in their minds. And we played Dublin in the quarter-final this year and we were down by 6 points at half-time and we came back at them and we had them on the back foot. And if the game maybe went on another couple of minutes, we could have come back. And they ended up getting winning by a goal, but we had 16 wides in the second half, or 16 wides in total against them. They had three. Mm. So we definitely had them on the back foot. And Cork are a better team than we are, and they definitely wouldn't have 16 wides. So I think it could be playing on Dublin's mind again, and Cork will push on if they get the chance. If they sniff blood, they'll definitely go for it.
Because if you're that kind of a team, and I'm not suggesting that Dublin are that team, but look, as you said, you know, 6 points clear against you in the quarter final, and if you had taken your chances, you make a very good case that Monaghan should be, you know, through to the semi-final. But if you're that kind of a team where you get a lead and then suddenly you get nervous, it's very hard. It's a very hard thing to banish from your psyche when you're out there.
It is. Like, when you cross that line, that's it. You're out on the field. And no matter what you do sometimes on the field, you just can't help it. And nearly towards the end of the match, you're nearly looking for another half-time or a timeout to get in and regroup, but you just don't have it. So I think that's where your real leaders come on the field, and when your leaders stand up. And it's probably something now this year it'll be interesting to see who the leaders are on the Dublin team, because they have had a lot of retirements and a few people missing. A lot of the older players, you would say, are missing this year. Mm. So it will be interesting to see now on Sunday who their leaders are and who's going to stand up. But without a doubt, they have some great players. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
I think they've lost 8 in total from that final last year, either through injury or suspension. And they've brought in a few under-21s from the squad. So maybe that's a good thing, because they don't have the new faces don't have any experience from that final last year. They've no baggage from that. And, you know, there's nothing like some fresh faces coming through who are confident, who don't know what it's like to lose, particularly in those kind of circumstances, to kind of give the whole squad a lift.
Well, that's so true. And the players they have brought in are very talented players, and they're actually players who are used to winning rather than used to losing. And the under-21s and minor All-Irelands, and particularly this year, their under-21s beat Cork along the way. So they have that as well. They have an advantage of beating Cork at underage. So maybe they won't have that fear factor. And I'm not saying there is a fear factor there, but if there is, they won't have that fear factor against Cork. So it will be interesting to see. As I said, you will see those young players who will go out without any fear and probably will stand up to Cork, but then the only disadvantage they have is that maybe some of those younger girls haven't got the experience of playing in Croke Park, so that might just go against them as well a little bit. So it's hard to know if it's an advantage or a disadvantage.
Yeah, it
not
is.
Not been there last year.
And you look at that Cork team and you look at the amount of All-Ireland titles between some of them. I mean, it's just a group of players that know how to win on the big day. They go in as favourites. They're deservedly favourites. It'll be interesting to see, you know, it's a fascinating game for a few different reasons. What do you think about this Cork team? How strong are they?
Oh, Cork are just phenomenal. They're so strong. And as you said, they have vast experience. But I was just reading there during the week, they have 5 players who are there for all of the All-Irelands, so they're going for 10 and 11 years, and they have 5 players that have won those 9 All-Irelands already.
Wow.
And still big players on the team, like, and they're still young, they're 28, 29, and they're still the key players down through all the central positions, so that's massive for them. But they're a phenomenal team, and I suppose the fact that they have Eamon Ryan there, and Eamon's been with them from the get-go, he's been there since the first All-Ireland, and the players are just, they're so talented, and they have that, you can see the leaders on the field, and when things go against them, you can see the players that stand up. But then all across the field, the other girls just feed off that, and you can see it on the pitch that they're just phenomenal in every lane, pace across all the across the whole pitch as well. So I just think they'll be very hard stopped, to be honest.
Just on a general note, Sharon, if you don't mind, how did the season go for you and for Monaghan overall?
To be honest, in comparison to other seasons, probably not just as well. This year and last year, we failed to win any silverware, which is a big disappointment, especially in Ulster, where, like, even in Ireland, we consider ourselves one of the top teams, but yet we've nothing to show for. So it has been disappointing. But
why is that, do you think?
It's hard to know. I suppose we lost two All-Irelands in recent years to Cork in 2011 and 2013, and we changed our management then in 2014, so we had a whole new management system, and we lost a few girls, and we never really regrouped, to be quite honest, and we haven't hit the heights that we were at in 2013, and just missing those few players, a few leaders maybe you could say, or more experienced players, and we just haven't clicked since. And it is disappointing because we do still have a very strong panel, but it just hasn't really got going for us. But in seeing that, we were only a kick a ball away from Dublin in the quarter final, and Dublin went on to beat Armagh, who we had beaten in the first round of the championship. So a kick of a ball, a goal, or even just a kick of the ball in, if we could have been where Dublin are this weekend, but it just wasn't to be for us.
Just finally, I mean, the standard in general across the board, do you think, I've heard a lot of people say that women's football has really benefited from changing in training and tactics, and I suppose even the coverage that's gone into it as well. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the top teams, they're used to now Cork always being there, but there was always a couple of teams challenging Cork, three or four, but that has opened up a little bit, and even in our own province in Ulster, like, we would have always been the kingpins, but in recent years, Armagh and Donegal have both beat us. But definitely, ladies' football is upped in its standards. You even know just from the training that's going on and the setup that county teams have, like, it's got a lot more professional. And teams are training just as much as men's teams are. They're doing the gym work, they're doing the strength and conditioning, looking after the nutrition. And management teams, you can see it now, every management team is coming with a very experienced team behind them and coming with their tactics, with their performance analysis. And all that's going into it nowadays. And as you said, the media and the coverage, like, it has grown a lot. And I suppose with the Women's Gaelic Players Association set up this year and some of the campaigns that they're running, such as Behind the Player, it's about getting the public to know the players there, because I do think people have an admiration for ladies football, and there is a lot of talk about it, but it just maybe hasn't transferred into bums and seats just yet, but it will get there over time, I think.
Absolutely, and if it keeps going, you know, I completely agree. I think that'll happen as well. Look, it should be a brilliant final on Sunday. Enjoy it if you're going to sit down and watch it, and thanks a million for coming on, Sean. I appreciate it.
Brad, no problem. Thanks very much.
Super stuff. Thanks a million. Sean Courtney there, All-Star and Monaghan footballer. Okay, we're going to move on because the Moose is on the line. Hey, Moose.
Hi, are you all right?
Not too bad, thanks. Look, I know you're at Fulham and that's starting pretty soon, so we won't keep you too long. But can I get your initial reaction to Blatter's criminal charges? I mean, have you had time to take this in? It's surprising the timing of it, but maybe not necessarily that this has come.
No, not surprised at all. And I think, you know, I mean, obviously the wheels of justice will now take their place, but you have to wonder why it's taken so long. And you have to also wonder how many more people are going to be implicated in FIFA and, yeah, who will be leading FIFA, because obviously the name of Michel Platini has also been raised today regarding the extra payment or what have you. Well, I'd like to know what the payment was, and I'm sure other people will. And, you know, it'll be very interesting to see, you know, in terms of that, what whether or not there's a possibility of, you know, a chance of, you know, Michel Platini even being implemented.
Yeah, no, it does, and it seems to be spreading further and further along the FIFA line. Listen, in terms of, we had a good conversation last night about Liverpool and Brendan Rodgers. I mean, should they lose to Aston Villa at home tomorrow, Moose, do you think that Brendan Rodgers' time is up? Will he be sacked, do you think?
I think there's a reasonable chance. I think that Brendan knows that, you know, there are lots of people now who maybe aren't on his side, both within Liverpool, with the fans. And I think it becomes quite difficult for him to hang on to his job if they don't win tomorrow. They've had a terrible start. They had a terrible result in midweek against Carlisle. Forget the 47 shots and what have you. And I just think that, you know, one more bad result, and you have to wonder whether or not the people who run the club will look at it and think, you know, is it time for a change? Jurgen Klopp this week has said he wants to come to the Premier League. I don't think that's helped Brendan in any way, shape or form. I mean, you know, my admiration for Brendan has been well documented on this radio station.
Yeah.
You know, I would be very sad to see Brendan leave Liverpool Football Club if that's going to happen. But I certainly think he needs to win tomorrow, and he needs to win well tomorrow, because otherwise I would fear for what may happen.
Yeah, that's a good point. Just Tottenham against Manchester City, just a bit of criticism towards Harry Kane at the moment, just because he hasn't been as in as good form as he was, say, this time last year. Is that overly harsh, do you think? And Spurs, with Manchester City coming, how do you see this one going?
Totally and utterly ridiculous.
Yeah.
Totally and utterly ridiculous. I mean, you know, that man has been, he scored 21 league goals last year, over 30 goals in all competitions for Spurs. You know, in terms of, you know, what he's done, you know, he scored a couple of goals for England this year. You know, I think it would be absolute lunacy for people to start getting on Harry Kane's back, you know, just because he hasn't scored yet for Spurs. I mean, he's playing in a Spurs team which, you know, haven't created that many chances for him. You know, if he was missing chance after chance after chance, then maybe you could say that the criticism was warranted. But, you know, I don't think it is warranted. I think that, you know, he's basically had very few chances. And what he has, chances he has had, he's largely had to create for himself. So I think it's very, very difficult and very, very wrong for people to criticise him at this early stage of the season.
OK, listen, we'll leave it there, Moose. Thanks a million. Appreciate your time and sorry for we're a little bit late this evening, but enjoy the match tonight.
No worries.
Super. Thanks, William. Ian Abrahams there. OK, 51552 for your text messages. I fancy the Argies to reach the semi-finals. Great to watch, says Mick and Navin. Well, Mick, if that's true and Ireland top the group, it'll be at our expense. So we hope it's not true.
Mick doesn't sound like he's from Argentina either.
No, he doesn't. Not too many Micks from Argentina, I'd imagine. Miguel's maybe, but anyway, 51552, as I said, for your text. We have Liam Nash is on external too. How are you, sir?
Hey, you.
I'm pretty good. I'm a little bit disappointed, before we get into the racing this weekend, that Jeske is out for the season, Liam. Just very unlucky, it seems. Jessica Harrington disappointed, as are racing fans.
Yeah, I just heard it this evening, the same as everybody else, I'm sure. Mm. And the thing about Jeske was that he came up short as a champion hurdler when the Mullins Brigade kicked in, the new Mullins Brigade after Hurricane Fly. Mm. But having done that and having, as I say, kind of come up short there, he then put himself in line for the world hurdle at Punchestone. And he showed a side of himself that suggested that staying might be his real game. And I was really looking forward to him as a 3-mile hurdler for the coming year. And it's a shame. And like, it's a shame for any stable to lose their kind of stable star. You know, they've he's been a real shining light for him over the past couple of years, and it must be devastating for the people in the Harrington stable, you know.
Yeah, and I was really looking forward to seeing Barry Geraghty get on board as well, because I just really, and again, this is nothing against Tony McCoy, who's an absolute legend of sport, I just felt that the connection that Geraghty had with Jeske was just better than he had with McCoy, and that's just my own opinion. People will say I'm wrong.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I suppose the only thing about that, Hugh, is that his contract with McManus will probably determine that he wouldn't even be on him. That,
well, that's right,
they'll certainly have something for the world hurdle anyway, you know.
Yeah, okay, listen, we've plenty of time to talk about the national hunt in the next couple of weeks, and there's some very interesting news coming out of Willie Mullins' stable and Nicky Henderson's stable, if you're a fan of Sprinter Sacker. We'll get back to that though, because we've got to talk about the weekend to come and the Middle Park Stakes at Newmarket tomorrow. I mean, you can't really have a bet in this, can you? I mean, if you fancy the favourite, Chalat, I think 4-9 is the best price at the moment. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I was being really enthusiastic about all these 2-year-old trials last week, and we had two of them last week as well. And these two this week are really kind of embedded in the calendar for years. And as you say, this Middle Park over 6 furlongs, we have the favourite Chalat. In most books at the moment, the 2,000 guineas seems to be between Air Force Blue and Emotionless. And yet, Timeform have Chalat rated higher than both of them. And that's kind of an indication of how impressive he was. I loved him at Goodwood in the Richmond, but what really took my fancy was the way he won the Primorny at Deauville in a bog, which wouldn't have suited him at all, you know. And John Gosden, who is my favourite trainer, as you have heard about him 100 times at this stage, but he has been adamant that he is not going to be a guineas horse.
Right.
Now, it'll be very interesting if he wins this thing tomorrow, and maybe they'd be tempted to go for the Dewhurst in a couple of weeks' time over 7 furlongs. And that then might open up a guineas possibility. But Gosden is a very shrewd man, and he said immediately after he went in the Richmond Stakes, He said, don't be putting guineas into my mind. He said, this horse is a shoe-in for the Commonwealth Cup or whatever they call it at Royal Ascot next year, which is over 6 furlongs. So he thinks he's an out-and-out sprinter. But I think he's really good. And this is a handy field enough. Like, Ajaya won the Gym Crack. And Buratino, who was brilliant in winning the Coventry at Ascot, then came to the Curra a couple of weeks ago and Air Force Blue put him in his place, and like, it is still top form, but Shala has been so impressive in my book that I'd find it very hard to see him beaten. Well, it will be very difficult to beat him, I'd say, there tomorrow.
Well, I tell you what, if you think that somebody could persuade Gosden to go for the guineas, he's best priced 16 to 1 at the moment. So, as you said, it all depends on what the trainer's saying, but if he's pretty adamant he's not going there, maybe leave the price as it is.
That's 16 to 1 about the Time Farm top rated 2 year old. So you can read from that they're all pretty clued into what Gosden has been saying.
Okay, so let's go on to the fillies then, the Group 1 as well. And this is a much more open race, if you like, in terms of the betting at the moment. Bechara, Illuminate, Lumiere, Alice Springs there as well. Who do you fancy here? Tough to separate the old girls, huh?
Well, I think this is a real cracker, because to me, the three that you mentioned, Bechara, Illuminate and Lumiere, are top of the fillies three, as far as I've been looking at, over 6 furlongs. And they have form tied up between them. Like, Illuminate beat Bechara in the Duchess of Cambridge and had won at Royal Ascot and had won the Albany there. So she's unbeaten after three races. But after being beaten by Illuminate, I think Bechara improved a lot and won twice after that. Won the Princess Margaret at Ascot, and I thought was very impressive in the Lowther at York. And I think both of them have it above Lumiere. So I think when it'll come down to it, it'll be between Bechara and Illuminate. I've just loved Illuminate all year. And it was interesting that you mentioned Alice Springs, because Alice Springs was third to Minding and Ballydial in Ormaglare Stakes. Now, we reckon Ormaglare is the best fillies trial of the year, and so she was not far behind two excellent fillies. So you can't disregard her. Gerlaine's runs bare cheek there, but I couldn't see that one being as good as the others. But, you know, I won't have a bet in the race, because everything that I'll be looking for is a guineas pointer. And whether Illuminate will go on to stay a mile, I'm not too sure. But I think over 6 furlongs, she has been scintillating up to now.
Yeah, well, the fact that Ryan Moore is back, as you said, and the form of Alice Springs, I'm actually looking at her each way. How many runners in the race? Is there 7 or 8? 8 runners in the race.
Well, she's about 11 to 2, 6 to 1, and she's certainly an each way prospect at that.
Like, yeah, okay, well, that's going to be my little bet for the weekend. Okay, we'll move on to the Curra on Sunday then. Aidan O'Brien, an incredible record in the Blandford Stakes, a Group 2. Is it, did you say 12 of the last 16 or 17, Liam?
12 out of the last 17, which is a fantastic record in any race. And this is a race that has thrown up some really good horses. Sir Nicholas Abbey won it, and there was a trio of John Ox horses won it. I remember See the Stars winning it. Asamoah won it. Alamshar won it, and they all went on to fantastic heights after that. So it's a race to really keep in mind. And having said all of that, I think this year's renewal isn't great. But O'Brien runs to Beacon Rock and Unicorn. From the betting, or from the riding arrangements in Ballydial at the moment, you don't know where to look to, because Ryan Moore now, you think, will be coming in and riding his first jockey, but you just don't know. He is on Beacon Rock, and to my mind, the maiden that he won, beating Precious Gold, was a really average maiden, whereas Unicorn was second to True Solitaire at Galway and then improved enormously to win an all right kind of a maiden at Leopardstown. But I think that the run of True Solitaire after Galway, and you were there on the day at Leopardstown when he was second to Johannes Vermeer the day of the Champions Day. I thought that was a very good two-year-old race. It was a Group 3, and in third place there was Sanus Per Aquam, who won at Newmarket yesterday. So I think that form is solid form, and I like True Solitaire in that race on Sunday.
Well, you know what as well? I mean, because Ryan Moore is on Beacon Rock, it's just going to contract the price naturally because of who he is. And maybe there might be just a little bit of value looking at O'Brien's other horse, Unicorn, as he said. Anyway, St. Nicholas Abbey, when you mention him, I get pains in my stomach because I loved that horse, but he just never delivered on his ability.
Love affair,
I think
was short lived with a lot of people, I can tell you, including me.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Last one is the CL Weld Stakes at the Curragh. I'm not overly familiar with this one, but 3 for Aidan O'Brien. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, one of them, How High the Moon, cost me a right few quid. He was my punter's counsel about 3 weeks ago,
okay.
And she failed to win that one, 7-4 favourite, and as you just mentioned, beaten by her stable companion Kind of Magic at 14-1, and was left with a fair amount to do. Kind of Magic runs again on Sunday, but I'm hoping that How High the Moon will overturn that form. And things are complicated a little bit by the fact that he runs Coolmore. Now, again, going back to your day at Leopardstown,
yeah.
Coolmore in the first race that day on Champions Day was put in her place by Anamba, ridden by Shane Foley. Now, Anamba runs again tomorrow or on Sunday. That was her first run. I think she's entitled to improve a fair bit. And while I'm a bit of a... I was a How High the Moon fan, well... you know, I think it might be close enough between herself and Anamba.
Yeah, I had a few quid on Coolmore that day, and I just didn't. I never thought anywhere near winning, to be honest with you. I don't think even I can blame Joseph O'Brien for that one. So we'll leave it off. Can I have your naps for the weekend, please, Ian?
Yeah, well, I'm going to nap Deauville in the 2 o'clock at Newmarket tomorrow. I think it's a 2 horse race. I know there's plenty a talk of the Gosden Horse Foundation in the race, but I just think that maybe Deauville would be more battle hardened, and I have 2 for Sunday. True Solitaire in that 3.55, and I'm pretty sweet on a horse at Epsom in the 4.55 on Sunday called Swashbuckling.
Swashbuckling, okay. Do you no idea of roughly what price will be short enough, will it?
Well, I think there are a couple in it. Prendergast Hill will be taking him on in the betting, so you're talking about something around 2s, I'd imagine.
Okay, lovely stuff. Okay, Swashbuckling at Epsom on Sunday afternoon. Stay with us, Liam. We've got the Punters Council coming up after these.
Entertainment with 2FM.
Imagine being invited to a Beatles recording session. Now the experience is coming to you. The Sessions, a live restaging of the Beatles at Abbey Road Studios. The newest, most spectacular Beatles show ever. April 3rd, SSE Arena Belfast, and April 4th, 3 Arena Dublin. Be there for a historically accurate restaging of the Beatles' legendary sessions. Tickets are on sale now.
Entertainment with 2FM.
Those generous folks at Paddy Power just can't stop giving. They pay more extra places on horse racing than any other bookie. And the gifts don't stop there. They're also giving anyone lucky enough to be watching this ad a massive cash prize. All you have to do is call the number on the bottom of the screen right now to claim your cash. Now, get dialing, guys. Why not download Ireland's most popular betting app today? Paddy Power. You're welcome.
The TG Cahir All-Ireland Ladies Football Championship Finals take place on Sunday, September 27th in Croke Park. Scotland meet Louth in the junior decider at 11.45. The intermediate final features Kildare and Waterford at 1.45, and Cork and Dublin renew their rivalry in the TG Cahir Senior Final at 4. Tickets available from tickets.ie, the Ladies Gaelic Football Association, and usual GAA outlets. The TG Cahir All-Ireland Ladies Football Finals. Be the difference. Be there.
And you're very welcome back. Okay, last part of the show for the week that's in it. And just to let you know, Gary, we're looking at McIlroy here. He is still 1 over par after 4 holes. But as I said to you, I mean, he's a back nine special in this course. He just seems to prefer the back nine, so I wouldn't be panicking, would you?
Not really. A little disappointed. I mean, Stenson's started well. He's 2 under through 4 for 9 under, so he's 3 ahead of Casey at 6 under. And Zach Johnson's hanging around. But Rory has the... You know, it's about time he showed us there... The wee will we.
Yeah. The fact that he hasn't played a lot of golf.
Yeah, it's hard getting back into it. And I think, you know, with Jason Day not doing a whole lot and Jordan Spieth, well, I guess he's only 1 in front of Spieth, but, you know, it's not their show this week. So it's good chance for him to shine. But Stenson, he's won around here 2 years ago.
Yeah, and when he's on this kind of form, it's this time of the season he seems to just go through that hot streak, doesn't he?
Yeah, he used to it earlier in his career. It was the Middle East and start of the year, and now he's doing it this time of year. So maybe he's just had kids and things have changed, so he's better off this time of the year.
He does seem a more relaxed person on the golf course.
He's great, Stenson.
Yeah,
he was stone mad on the course.
And yeah,
he's calmed down a lot, and he's extremely funny guy. Good guy to be around. And
would he go out for a few pints and all that kind of stuff?
No, I don't think he actually drinks.
Really?
But he's just he's
what's
just
wrong
good
with
company.
Him?
I don't think he's ever that thirsty. Maybe that's what it is. But his caddy Lordy likes the occasional pint.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
Drives a Ferrari.
Oh.
Yeah, as you do. Lives in Monaco.
Lovely.
Living the dream.
Living the dream. That's the benefits of being versus Bo, who's
he's on the way home from Munich now. Yeah. Tail between his legs. Another missed cut with Manicero.
What's going on with Manicero?
Just golf, Hugh.
Yeah.
Nobody owns it.
Yeah, that's very true. Do we have Leon Blanche on the line?
No,
we
no bookie.
Do. No bookie.
No bookie whatsoever.
Okay.
Oh, we know the bets. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
Okay. We don't have a bookie, but we do have a punter to play in our punters' council. Patrick Linden, how are you?
I'm good, thank you very much.
Listen, we're going to do our best. Yeah, not too bad. Look, can you just tell us, first of all, who you're playing for this weekend, if you don't mind?
We're playing for the St. Francis Hospice at Salou Golf Course tomorrow morning.
Okay, brilliant.
And then, if I'm allowed to mention the pub.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, the fundraiser is in the Comet Pub in Santry tomorrow evening, where we'll be having raffles, auctions, prizes, and all the proceeds will be going to this wonderful organisation, which is St. Francis Hospice.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Well, we are going to try and get you a bookie to give you a few odds. I'll go through the bets first, and then we get Leon to price it up when he comes on. Andrew, start with you, if you don't mind. You're going to actually share Gary's microphone, if you don't mind, sorry, because the old three externals. So, I've
shared worse with him.
Yeah, so what do you fancy this weekend?
Right, well, I suppose, actually, I'm going to blame you for a little bit of this, because this is out of the
don't
brilliance
hang it on my
of
hat.
Your mind. But basically... This is a five timer, so there's five parts to this, but three of them are rock solid. Okay,
oh, right.
So Liverpool will beat Aston Villa at Anfield.
Yeah,
Man United will beat Sunderland at Old Trafford.
Yeah,
Chelsea will beat Newcastle wherever
in St James's Park.
But it is at St James's Park.
Mm.
Now it's Wales +8 points to beat England, and Samoa +20 points to beat South Africa.
Okay, so you've gone for two in the Rugby World Cup. Wales +8. Samoa +20 against South Africa, then Chelsea, Man U and Liverpool all to win. That's the first one for you, Patrick. Gary is also here, and you have picked a
golf bet. Rory McIlroy at 6-1 to win on Sunday night.
To win on Sunday night. So basically, two and a half rounds left to go. Well, nearly three rounds left to go. McIlroy at the moment, 3 under par after five. He's 6 shots off the lead, held by Henrik Stenson, and he is 6-1 to win that. And Liam Nash, what do you fancy?
Yeah, I'm going for Deauville in the second race at Newmarket tomorrow. He's priced around evens 5-4 at the moment, but he's the one that I'm going to hang my hat on.
Okay, Andrew, your bet worked out roughly when we calculated it on.
It was about, well, Leon, he normally would have been generous. He would have given me 11-1.
Okay, 11. Well, roughly 11-1 for Andrew's five-timer. 6-1 about Rory McIlroy as things stand. And Liam's horse, well, I think we can push it out to 6-4 by being very generous, as I am, considering it's not my money, Patrick. What do you fancy of those? The five-timer from Andrew, Rory McIlroy, or Liam's Deauville the horse? What do you reckon?
Well, I totally agree with Liam Deauville, and if I'm getting 6-4 on that, that'd be brilliant.
Right, okay. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to guarantee a 6-4 because Leon wouldn't answer the bloody phone, so he can piss off. So listen, have a great few days, and we'll talk to you on Monday if you're a winner, and best of luck with everything. Thanks,
that's
Patrick.
Brilliant. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Patrick there. Lyndon, who's playing for St. Francis Hospice. Okay, my thanks to Gary, my thanks to Andrew, producer tonight, and Mary as well. We will talk to you on Monday. Have a great weekend.